Mike was saying I've become aggressively cranky, and I agree. I agree. I've been trying to manufacture a vibe shift. I went for a long walk on the beach on Friday, and the sun was out, and that's why it's kind of cold here. It's too cold for the sleeveless, but I'm doing it anyway. I'm trying to start the spring.
With your guns, you're just trying to flex spring into existence.
Exactly.
But
Hey,
then
Max.
you fucked it all up last night by tweeting.
I
Like
know.
whatever vibe shift you had created this weekend, you ruined it all by tweeting last night.
Well, a lot of people agree with me. There's just a couple of weirdos. I also think people on the internet can't be normal about Millie Bobby Brown. So if you're tweeting anything in regards to her, it's always going to get weird. I hope she has a good support team around her because I'm a big fan of hers and people are weird about her.
She desperately needs one.
Yeah.
She's Chloe Grace Moretz level target for weirdos and creepers and then people who irrationally hate her
Yeah,
because
that's
she's
what
a
I felt
target
like the, you know,
for
we were
weirdos and
talking, the tweet
creepers.
was about someone zooming in on a banner. It's not even a still of the movie. And those are like super HDR files that they take stills of. And they could see the little mesh of her wig. And I was like, who cares? Movies are make-believe. And people are like, we're allowed to mock her. All right, you weirdos. Like, I don't know. I think she's great.
It was a weird week for weirdos, which I'm sure we'll get into as soon as Vice gets here. Vice is late as always, but
He's
you
coming
know,
in. He's
I know,
connecting.
I see him, I know he's here, but I just always have to point out that he's late as always. We record basically the same time every week, and he still has a hard time grasping
Black people time. Black people time.
That. But I must also be black. That's what we've also realized.
No,
No.
you're on
Oh, no.
California standard time, which is just as bad.
I think
So,
it's just narcissist time.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to this week's episode of Action for Everyone for this here, March 24th, 2024. I am, as always, your host, Mike Scott, on a just absolutely gloomy, miserable, terrible day here in Salt Lake City. It's windy and rainy and sleety. It's awful. So it's a good thing that I'm joined by some bright, sunshiny faces to help elevate my mood. So, Vice Victus, Vice, how are you today, man?
Yeah, so we're gonna do some more of the old man weather podcast. So over here in New York, even though spring is officially here, it's like 30 fucking degrees. It's still wintertime. Like spring, fight back. Like fuck, this is not cool. But otherwise, you know, I'm doing okay. Doing great. It's good to see you again.
And Liam O'Donnell. Liam, how are you today?
I'm doing great. I'm doing great. I had a great weekend. I had a long walk on the beach on Friday. A lady gave me a free Celsius, and my whole vibe changed. Everything's different now. We're into the spring. Had a victorious day on the pitch yesterday. Coached
Yeah.
both my girls two victories. Ruby had two goals. We're down 3-0, and we won 6-3. So it was pretty sick.
Nice, nice, very good. And you are actually coaching these teams, right?
I am the head coach of a U8 team and a U12 team in the spring, which spring is obviously a little less time consuming, but it all works out for my schedule because I get up super early and Rob, the editor in the UK, at 1:30, it's like, what, 8, 9 o'clock for him. So then the soccer practices are in the afternoon. So it all kind of actually fits.
Nice. Excellent. And then, as always, producer Max. Max, how are you doing today?
I'm good. I just, if people have been following me on Twitter, I just came back from the opera. and ballet. We saw Sue Surprise Me because I've never been to either. So we went and saw Oedipus Rex and Antigone, and that was a hoot and a holler. I had a great time. They ended the Oedipus Rex with the actor. He came forward, bloodied eyes, everything, just showered in it and felt it. It's like it was great. I was like, oh my God. There's like a 9-year-old next to me. She's like, oh my God, I'm scared. I'm like, look at it. Look at it, you little shit. It's good for you.
I think my go-to like essay throughout high school and college was how Creon was actually the tragic figure of Antigone and not Antigone. And it was like it was such an easy one that I just kept writing over and over again for different teachers.
I think we all probably had that. We all had the essay that we just continually refined and refined and refined. I think I carried it, yeah, like all the way high school through into college. I think I just refined the same essay over and over again.
It's good to know we have such men of culture and academia to talk about the stupidest stuff on this show, especially today.
Also, to fill in for the weather over here, it's rainy. Not it's on and off. It's 46 degrees. Mike has commented in the past that I've gone native with my dates, but temperature wise, I'm still in Fahrenheit, so it's 46. It's not that cold, but had my pimp coat out in the rain, and it was nice. So.
Yeah, for those who don't know, when Max and I are working together on edits and we're talking about dates and stuff, he does that backwards ass European way of determining dates, and I want to reach through the screen and punch him. But anyway, all right. So we have got what sounds like not a very packed episode this week, but I think the two things that we're going to talk about are there's more than enough meat on them to take up a good amount of time. First thing we're going to do is we're going to get into Roadhouse, and then we're going to spend a little bit of time talking, well, kind of hopefully more than a little bit of time talking about the AI kerfuffle, because something that came up to me over the Discord this weekend was something that I had had suspicion of, but was confirmed, which is a lot of people talking about this don't actually even understand AI or how it works. And Liam hooked us up with also an episode of the podcast that we've referenced several times, The Town with Matt Bellany. They had an episode just the other day about AI, and it's only a 30-minute episode. It's a quick listen, but it's very informative. So I am going to be kind of stealing some stuff from that, because my goal when we get into it is I'm not going to rant. I have one little rant, but other than that, I'm not going to rant. My goal is I kind of just want to like help clarify some of the reasons that somebody like me, who ostensibly should be very anti-generative AI, and in a lot of ways is, maybe wasn't on board with the boycotting the indie horror movie. And I think a lot of people might understand a little bit if I can articulate, well, what I want to say. So I'll be putting on teacher hat for that. But first and foremost, we got in a movie where Jake Gyllenhaal slaps like six dudes to the ground. Just an entire fight of him slapping dudes that we have to talk about. It was a very contentious movie this weekend, which is, I think, somewhat amusing, because I think the general consensus on this is going to be, at least I know at least two of us really quite enjoyed the movie, but I probably liked it the most, but even I'm not going to say that I don't understand getting worked up one way or the other for this movie, but let's go to Vice, as we always like to do first. Vice, let's go to you first. Let's talk about Roadhouse, the 2024 Doug Liman quote unquote remake of the Patrick Swayze classic.
To go back a bit, I really enjoyed last week when you kind of both of you kind of said your piece about the emotions and kind of state of mind behind your feelings of the Crow remake, because that's a very specific particular when it was as you talked about how it was made and even its lore slash creation, every life and in its property itself. So in this case though, I did feel beforehand, before the premiere, people were being a little too precious about Bar Fight the movie. So, if I haven't already said it before, I'm like, my whole stance is remake everything, remix it, remake it. I don't give a shit. I want, like, for me, everything will be there. So, I want Don Lee and Shaft. That's what I want, I want them to do big spins on everything.
Well,
That all said.
really quick, Vice, I just want to interject one point, because I know, because when we get into it with me, I'm going to agree with you that people are being a little too precious about the original Roadhouse. I don't want people to think I'm being a hypocrite about The Crow. Here's the thing. I have never been anti-remake of The Crow. I am anti this remake of The Crow for the very specific reasons that I articulated. Yeah. Remake the shit. I wanted the Jason Momoa remake. I'm with you. All right, continue.
So here we have, 2024 Roadhouse with Jake Gyllenhaal, the man. And I guess I'll say, the original kind of movie was just like here's a warrior poet, gets down in the dirty South. It's a very strange, unusual, peculiar, vibe to the whole thing. It's sleazy and dirty and, sexy, all that sort of stuff. This new movie is more like, here's this like violent mental case who's seeking atonement in, America's Wang, the foreskin of America, AKA Florida. And it's like, on paper, that's actually a pretty cool premise. Like, I like that they, if nothing else, this is one of those remakes where like they're definitely trying to make their own spin on the thing. So I just from the out of the gate, I appreciate that. But overall, though, it's a pretty to me very unwieldy movie, in that there's a lot to like about it, and there's some really stuff that's just plain old barefaced enjoyment entertainment, which is what's trying to do. But the way it's kind of put together in various parts definitely felt off to me. And not just because it's a remake, just because like just as a movie on its own, like if it like it's it I guess like I mentioned before, it's enough of a twist to the premise that this could ostensibly be its own original movie, more or less, if it was close to the news, you wouldn't know it was based on Roadhouse. But that all said, just as a functional movie, it was just really weird getting through. Cause it's just a 2.5 2 hour 4 minutes, really weird like pacing, and then so just a lot of weird things about it construction wise that kind of threw me off. But again, that all said, when it gets to the actual fun, meaty, bludgeony parts of what you're expecting, it's more or less what it delivers. But even then, there's some weird stuff to it too that we'll get into. So it's a difficult recommendation for me overall, but there's more things to talk about that's why it's interesting, or why it was made the way it was, than I think the movie itself being interesting. So just not a bad place to be, because a part of what I like to do, and I think we do in this show, we like to kind of deconstruct what does or does not work about action movies in particular. I think there's a lot going on behind the scenes and within the story itself, narratively and technically, that warrants a discussion. But yeah, like I was saying, it's kind of a strange sit down to like when you're expecting this kind of, like a Saturday night, a brawler, with the beer and wings, and you sort of get that, but it's the vibes are off a little bit. That's what I'm saying. The vibes are off. But there's a lot going on that is worth talking about.
Liam, what are your thoughts?
I think similar to Vice, I think overall it was pretty fine. And as far as the remake discussion, I like you said, it's the Crow and this are very different. I like we were talking about how I was cranky on the Discord because it was just like, one of our younger guys said it was leagues better than the Swayze one, and I hadn't seen it yet. And I was like, settle down, leagues better. It was come on. And of course, seeing it, it's not better at all, let alone leagues better. It's not going to stay in the public zeitgeist consciousness for 40 years. It just isn't. It's fine. I think it's a fine movie. I think it's, I'm not like anti it, but it's just sort of like the bar in the first Roadhouse is a place that we all know exists. And there's an authenticity to that type of place. And they bring you in to this sort of ordinary profession. And they give you this kind of, you're led into a secret world that's within the world you live in that kind of dives into this extra depth to it, that's what makes it so memorable to me is that it does get into bouncing and it gets into this guy's lifestyle. And yes, there's the warrior poet stuff. The romance is, infinitely better. All that type of stuff. But I just felt like this was a pretty generic like movie overall, like that you guys mentioned Reacher. It's a little bit of the Deep Blue Goodbye, the John, John D. McDonald book, living on the houseboat in Florida, like kind of getting into the mysteries and stuff. Like it is sort of a generic plot that doesn't, it spends about 5 minutes on the bouncing. It never really fully commits to the romance. I think Jake is really good in it, and I think the fights are good, but it also takes about an hour to get into the action movie. So I don't really know what it's about, I guess is what you're saying, that the vibes are, I couldn't really, it is unwieldy. I think Vice is a is good there. And all that's to say, still had a really good time watching it. It's not like I was like, fuck this movie, I hate it or anything like that. I had a good time watching it, and like unfortunately for my immortal soul, I was hooting and hollering at the Conor McGregor performance, because fucking like steroid cocaine Popeye shows up in the movie, and he's just like, he's got a ridiculous 10-foot long chin that seems to just like lead him through every room with a smile that's going by wide. You're just like, I don't know, I like, at least I'm gonna remember that. That was the most memorable thing of the movie. So that's all to say, I think it's like a 3-star movie, 3.5 stars movie. It's perfectly fine. I have no ill will against it, and I don't even think that the fights are that distracting. We'll get into that, I'm sure. The four pass method, I thought it was like, if you didn't really know much about it, I don't think people would even be complaining. I think it.
Yeah, I agree. And I should say, I should have said this up front. Unlike Love Lies Bleeding, this is a movie that's literally on Amazon Prime right now, and it's a remake of Roadhouse. We're not going to mess around with spoilers. We're just going to go right into it and talk about whatever we want to talk about. If you can literally hit pause and go watch it right now, if you haven't, the reality is, if you were, like Vice said in his tweet, if you were going to see it, you probably already saw it. You knew you were going to see it. Nothing we say is going to change your opinion on it one way or the other. So we're not going to worry about spoilers. But Max, what did you think of it?
I agree with Liam and Vice. I think perfect 3-star fare, almost barely 3 stars. I will say Conor McGregor, not knowing anything much about him outside of the film, other than he's a UFC fighter or a former UFC fighter. I'm not sure if he's still competing. And I think he has quote unquote issues. I don't know. But
There's
with
definitely a cocaine
okay,
problem.
yeah.
It's
But
happening in real time on this press tour.
within the film, I actually feel like I'm blanking on his name. I probably should look it up, but the guy from Mortal Kombat 2021, I'm just gonna Google it really quick, sorry. Who
Dell?
played Kano? Josh Lawson. He feels like the one person who knows what film he's in, or rather what
Right.
film he should be in. And if anything, I'd wager that his character, him being Conor McGregor, feels like he belongs more in the original film, maybe more than this one. But no, I thought, again, perfect 3-star affair. I really liked what I said was I'm glad they went their own different route. Better for them to do that. But in that same breath, it doesn't really stand out either. But I really like that they stacked this with wall-to-wall people you want to see get punched in the face, like Ethan.
Billy Magnuson, the most punchable face in Hollywood, with Billy Magnuson. It's absolutely amazing to me.
Even the kid Lucas K Cage Gage, he was one of the bouncers in the Roadhouse. Even he, like, he's got a little bit of a punchable face, and he gets his just desserts as well. He's not like a bad character or anything, but like I don't know if I remember the last time I saw a movie that was like stacked with like everybody here should just take a fist to the face in some form or another. But as we'll get into with the way the fights were filmed, I had issues with it sometimes, and that issues where I didn't. I do feel like as someone who knew that they filmed it a certain type of way but didn't try to let that color my view of the fights, it still looked jarring in a lot of ways. But we'll get into those technical details. But overall, 3-star fare. It's in one ear, out the other. But like you can't really go wrong with it. It's what we described a Damsel a few weeks ago, where it's not really a date night sort of movie. You have leftovers and you toss it on, and maybe you'll have fun, maybe you won't. But it's not a crime against humanity. Like it's fine.
Yeah, I am. Well, so a couple of points, and you all kind of, I had like some talking points I wanted to get into, and you all, between the three of you, kind of brought them up. So I'm gonna have to, like,
Go
I'll
for
kind of
it.
address them. Yeah.
Yeah.
So first and foremost, like I said, I think I liked the movie more than everybody else, and part of that is obviously, again, I sort of have a holy trinity of actors that I love above and beyond all else. Obviously Scott Adkins, obviously Ethan Hawke, I won't shut up, and Jake Gyllenhaal. And so for me, the greatest special effect in the entire movie is Jake Gyllenhaal's face and his goofy, sad puppy dog eyes and stuff like that. So I am obviously coming at this from a position of bias already, because Gyllenhaal can almost do no wrong for me. But I think a lot of the complaints about it being unwieldy, the vibes being off, stuff like that, unfortunately, that's just kind of a Doug Liman problem. I mean, Doug Liman has never really made a movie that, A, isn't unnecessarily bloated, excluding stuff like Swingers and Go. But if you go back and rewatch Mr. and Mrs. Smith, that thing is absolutely carrying way too much weight on its bones.
He's a messy guy. And he likes it to be messy. It's part of his aesthetic. It's part of his appeal. I appreciate it too, but he's a messy guy.
And I don't disagree. I generally like Doug Liman movies more than I don't. But I think a lot of those criticisms are inherent in Doug Liman. I mean, even Edge of Tomorrow, which is a movie that, depending on what scuttlebutt you read, he may or may not have actually finished, is still messy. And I saw a lot of people talking about how it looked and it was dark. And that's kind of that's a twofold thing. That's one, also a Doug Liman thing, because his movies almost always look messy. Again, go back and rewatch Edge of Tomorrow. The battlefield scenes look great. That whole third act, when they're in the bottom of the museum or whatever in London, that's some fucking Peter Hyams level shit right there.
The third act is the part no one really remembers or talks about.
Exactly.
Because it does get a little unwieldy. I remember that. Yeah.
Which is also the same with Mr. and Mrs. Smith. Everybody talks about right up until they have the big fuck fight. And nobody else ever really talks about the like third act of Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
I remember
that Home Depot fight's pretty cool.
It's pretty cool, but you know, like people forget that even Adam Brody's like even in the movie.
I'm a Mr. and Mrs. Smith shooter, I guess.
I like the movie too. But like I said, Doug Liman has never made, I think, an unqualified masterpiece. I don't think he's ever made a movie that you don't have to put asterisks on. And this is another one of those. The other reason it looks like shit is just frankly, Amazon's compression algorithm is dog shit, especially if it's 4K Dolby Vision movie. If you watch a movie on Amazon and then you watch the exact same movie on iTunes or Vudu, you are going to see a significant difference in terms of the streaming quality. So that doesn't do it any favors either. But there are plenty of aesthetic choices that are Liman's. I do also need to really quickly address, so people don't think we've abandoned who we are. Conor McGregor is an absolute waste of a fucking human being. He is a horrible monster. Just go to his Wikipedia. I don't want to say all the stuff he's accused of because I don't want to trigger anybody, but let's just say, short of straight up murdering somebody, Conor McGregor has done, or at least been accused to have done it all. I think it's awful and reprehensible that they even cast him in this movie, but he is in the movie. And so there's kind of no way around it. And as we all know, as we talk about on this show, if I didn't watch an action movie because it had a monster in it, I wouldn't be watching very many action movies.
I remember when the casting of this was announced, you said you were not going to watch it.
I know.
I do think Mike Tyson is an interesting, at least, cross-reference for it, because it is like, you know, they both kind of presented themselves as psychopathic fighters. So when you find out bad things about him, you're like, yeah, that tracks.
Yeah.
It's a little bit different than like Tiger Woods getting, you know, you're like, hey, Tiger Woods, what a nice, upstanding family man. And then it's like, this guy has whores in every fucking Hooters in South Florida.
Yep.
And so like, it's just a different thing. It's a different transgression.
This is not
to make excuses for it, but I do think that's why someone like Mike Tyson can stay around long enough. And now we're all rooting for him to knock the head off of a Paul brother. Like,
well, and I think there is also at least somewhat of a fundamental difference, which is whether you thought his sentence was fair or long enough or whatever. Tyson fair. Is one of the few who was actually held accountable, did his time, did his penance. You know, you can argue whether, you know, that's a whole criminal justice system argument about, but unlike Conor McGregor, Tyson
that's a great point.
Been held accountable. And so, and then the other thing I kind of, well, the one thing that ties into that that I want to bring up is just in case people have probably already figured we're not complete idiots here. We are not going to be covering One Percenter on this. Speaking of abject monsters, that I haven't talked to Vice and Liam about that. That's a executive decision on my part. We will not be talking about One Percenter on this episode or on this show. Kind of the same way The Flash was just off the table. But anyway, the other thing I want to say, the one thing that I think is interesting, and this came up in the Discord, Liam, you said you don't think this movie is going to be around in 40 years. And I don't disagree with you, but this is the first time that I actually had this analogy in my head or thought of this. Because again, for those who don't have institutional memory, Roadhouse was a failure. Roadhouse was not a successful movie upon release. It was the 35th highest grossing movie at the box office. It was basically despised by certainly the critics. And it faded into the ether for the most part, but for the fact we had home video and syndication for movies. And it came out on VHS and it started building momentum. And then it started airing on things like TBS on Saturday afternoons. And it played over and over and over. Somebody, I can't remember, I think it may have been Aaron, brought up the interview with Ted Turner where he was saying he always plays Roadhouse at 2 a.m. because it was like you could distinctly see a spike in people getting home from the bars and being happy to watch Roadhouse at 2 a.m. And so the reason Roadhouse has lasted is because it had this very organic and, quite frankly, very unique and unusual path to cultural zeitgeist and consciousness. We don't have those anymore. That avenue for a movie to become a success and last doesn't exist anymore. And so that's part of the reason that I think we're always having these discussions about why does this movie come out, do big business, and then disappear when this movie lasted forever? Well, the reality is the landscape has changed. All movies are ephemeral. So it's not really, I think, a valid criticism that a movie from 40 years ago has lasted when they're not even playing on the same feel. Now, that being
said, they won't be, but I mean, look, it's a remake of movie, so just it has to be brought up. Now, I'm on the other side of it, that I think that path to becoming a classic is literally the highest, most elite, greatest path that a movie could have. I think that's why Roadhouse is better than almost every Best Picture winner ever, because those movies get, you know, everyone sits there and claps and jerks off about it for a year, and then they just get thrown into the garbage and people can't even remember what won 2 years ago. So I think that's sort of like the highest championship belt. It's the people's champion of becoming a classic. So that's why I'm like, that is the shit, because like you said, we always just thought like, it's not like the radio, you know how the radio could kind of make hits where they just play a song over and over again. It's not like that, because it's at the advertising basis, and they're basically saying, if I put Roadhouse on, it's pulling a fucking number. And so it's worth the licensing, and the licensing of that's going to go up because of the numbers that it's going to play. So again, it's just people liked it because it plays. Yeah. And that is, to me, like the highest place that you can reach. So
I was just going to say, I don't want it to sound like I disagree with you at all. I do not. And I don't think, this is more of like a philosophical discussion about the state of movies. I don't think there's any chance, even in a world where this could build an audience, it's not on the level of the original. I want that to be clear.
No, and in a better world, if like Ninja 2 was played by on TBS and TNT the way it should be, that movie would have continued to grow, because it is one of those movies that could play for people, because I watched it on like you can watch it on a Saturday at any time and you're like, that was great. Yeah. So yeah, anyway, Max.
Yeah.
No, just interjecting with some facts. I think I don't think you said the original Roadhouse was a box office failure, but it made 61 million internationally. That was 30 domestic and then 31 international. And its domestic opening weekend was 5 million, about 5 million. So, I mean, looking at Box Office Mojo, I'm not going week by week, but like, doesn't seem like it was that bad. It only cost 15 million to make.
35 movies opened bigger than it.
Sure.
Like you when you decide whether a movie is a failure or not, especially at the box office, you can't just look at what it makes. You have to look at what made more than it. And it did not, especially for somebody coming off the previous year, fucking Dirty Dancing, and then going the next year into Ghost. You've got two massive hits. So yeah, I mean, Roadhouse being a failure when it came out is kind of an objective truth. This is not really something that's open for interpretation. And again, I was alive. I remember this. This is the other reason I have problems with these conversations. I was actually there. So like it's, but again, that's the point. The reason Roadhouse is such a classic now is because it's slowly built. Because, and then I pointed this out on the Discord, there was kind of in the early 2000s, there were sort of two things that really happened at the same time. Mike Nelson of MST3K wrote one of the greatest movie guides ever, where he compared every movie to Roadhouse. He used the Roadhouse scale, and every movie in the guide was based on, is it better or worse than Roadhouse? And it was actually referenced in an episode of Dawson's Creek. And people are going to roll their eyes at that. But if you don't think that a 13-year-old watching Roadhouse get referenced on Dawson's Creek had a profound fucking effect on kids all of a sudden seeking out Roadhouse, you don't know how teenagers work. And so, you know, it built organically. This is never going to have that shot. And I don't think it would, because going back to what Vice said, it's so unwieldy. It does not just play. It does not just... You can't, first of all, Roadhouse comes in at whatever it is, a tight 89, 92 minutes, something like that. So you can easily play it in a 2-hour block on TV. You obviously cannot play this in a 2-hour block on TV. And it just doesn't play as well. So anyway, those are the points that I kind of wanted to bring up. Again, the things that I'm not really seeing a lot of people talking about, I'm just seeing a lot of it's a remake, so it sucks, or this or that. But let's get into it a little more. Vice, we haven't heard from you for a bit.
Well, so. I was gonna say, you know, usually the way we do it is get into the narrative and the spiritual, philosophical stuff of it all. But in this case, a lot of it, the big conversation that people aren't avoiding, as you mentioned, is the VFX of how the fights are made. So I wanted to talk with Liam a little bit about if he's familiar with this technique, as you mentioned before. So I think it's been called several different things, but it's he called it the ABCD of frames or plates. It's basically shout out to a couple people. Well, shout out to a boy Frankie, Times with Kung Fu, because he had put out the as this conversation was going on during the week, he had put clips online of several movies that have done this in the past, several Hong Kong movies that had done this years ago, where they basically there's in the frame, well, there's a shot of a hit, a punch, kick, whatever. And they it's a one frame or one footage of it is the actor hitting a object, a pillow or a blanket. Another image of the other actor who's getting hit, acting like he's getting hit with the another object. And they basically put those two frames together, and cohesively they look like one person hitting the other, like with full force. That's the whole point of the process, is to make it look like you can see the full force of a person's physical actions going at full force, combined with that full force of a person reacting to a hit. So it all comes more together. I guess ideally, like, cleaner than like the fake hits where you kind of punch around a person like a normal choreography. So that technique itself is not new, but apparently in Roadhouse, this new iteration, they kind of jazzed it up or amped it up a bit, well, quite a bit actually. Insofar as most of those shots in the past, they were static. You know, the camera's in one place, so they can easily put those images together. But what Roadhouse does basically all of his fight scenes is the camera itself rolls around the two combatants, or multiple combatants in the case of the bar fight scenes. So it's just very kinetic, like hyper-realistic fight imagery. And so, even that itself actually would be pretty cool, just to kind of see how it feels to be in a bar fight in 3D as opposed to seeing it statically. But then they combine that, using that with that motion, that imagery motion, I think people issue that people are having is that that motion in combination with the frame collaboration makes it seem off, or at the very least that the technique isn't maybe yet at a level where it can hide itself in that motion. So I just want to know, Liam, specifically, if you've seen this before in other works you've seen, or just your colleagues in the VFX world, and if you can kind of like, if you can like, when you as you're watching it, just as you know, as a well, as a viewer and as a VFX artist, could you like see the seams of it all? Could you like kind of pick out where maybe things are like still in the works, still in progress? Because it does feel very experimental to me as overall.
Yeah, I mean, look, everyone was posting the behind the scenes, so I watched that. What's the cool dude choreographer? Is it Garrett Brown with the eye patch?
Yeah,
Garrett Warren. Garrett Warren is.
Garrett Warren with the eye patch, and they're talking about it, and like you said, Vice. So it's you're doing the four different passes, so. To just talk about the first big use of it is the slap fight with Jake Gyllenhaal in the parking lot. And in order to do it that way, with doing four passes with a camera moving, it has to be a robotic camera or a motion control camera, is what I'm assuming. It's again, I only watched the clip that was on. I didn't really dig deep into it, but in order for it to be perfect with that many moves, it basically has to be a robot. And so you guys have seen that in a lot of movies. I mean, there's the those Netflix. There was some Netflix movie with some that had it. There was even Eco's movie with Louis Tan, the Fistful of Vengeance or whatever. They had one at the end fight.
Remember there was one, a big one in the Invisible Man movie. They had a lot of that in the that those
Yeah,
like
I
action
mean,
slash horror sequences. Yeah.
this technique was first used by Garrett Warren on Avatar. So it's not exactly like this is a new thing. Now, again, not comparing Roadhouse to Avatar, not comparing Doug Liman, but this is not a new thing. It's just being employed a bit differently than what we're used to seeing.
Right. And even in his sort of behind the scenes, he was saying like, oh yeah, great, we'll use it. Like as soon as it was explained to me, I was like, well, that's a good thing to do for kind of a kill shot to end a fight, kind of do it once and make a meal of it, like slow-mo. Like I don't like to watch a fight that has slow-mo for the whole goddamn fight, but it's like it builds
Oh,
up to a
are you
big.
talking about Rebel Moon? You talking about
Well,
Rebel
like to go to even like 300 doesn't do slow-mo for the whole fights. It will slow down for a cool moment and then it goes back
Yeah,
into
the rapid,
speed and the
yeah.
camera's
Yeah.
flying around. So it's like slow-mo just like this. I think it's a cool tool that can be used for the right moment. I don't know about using it for every single moment. And I think that was kind of my reaction to watching it before I watched the movie. But then when I watched the movie, I was like, well, the whole movie's very like gimbal based. I was telling you guys about how much fun I had with the gimbal on Warpath, and like the cameras in this, it's like the camera's kind of always moving, not just in the fight in the narrative. They do traditional coverage, but there'll be kind of interesting things where you're usually in a bar scene, especially you're just kind of doing kind of standard overs to overs, and it'll just be like it'll be the over, but then it starts to move onto Jake's face, and it's like a profile for kind of an extended long period of time, and then it'll come over and catch just a little bit of the other person talking. And so I think some of that is also what people feel with like things being slightly off, is that he's just not giving you the kind of the standard coverage throughout it. It's always kind of moving around and finding, experimenting with interesting shots. And I thought that stuff was all pretty cool. So I think with that coverage in conjunction with the fight stuff, it kind of worked for me. I didn't really have too big of an issue with any of that sort of fight stuff, or have it like pull me out of the movie all that much, to be honest. I thought that was all kind of overblown, and my wife like didn't know, she didn't say that looked weird or notice anything really. So I just was kind of like, I think it's just a little bit more of a big thing in our bubble, but I'd be kind of surprised that everyone being like, oh my God, it does. Like, for instance, when we said 300, the first time you saw 300, people were like, oh shit, this is something new. I don't think normal people watching this are going to be like, oh wow, this is something new. That's.
Right. Yeah, and I will say to that point, the movie opens with a its use, which with weirdly enough, Post Malone as like a doing cameos like an underground in like a
Another
fighter.
punchable face,
That
another
was Post
punchable face.
Malone. He was the dude who fucked off.
Yeah. Which is
I
really
was
weird.
wondering,
Like,
because I
I
was
don't
like,
think
he
he's
was in
a.
the movie. I'm like, where? I didn't even like, okay.
Yeah, like
Fair
he's not
enough.
a fighter at all that I'm aware of, so I don't even know
I don't know why that was happening
So
either.
yeah, it looks
Yeah.
all doughy and everything, but like, it looks like me. I'm like with less muscle. But yeah, like so in that first scene, this is the opening of the movie. I caught that the offness of it all because first of all, you don't expect if you know who Pokemon is, you don't expect him to fight, and then you see that like it does look like, yeah, it looks like they pasted him into the movie almost. Like yeah. So at first I was like, what's happening here? But then in the next kind of the next big scene where it's used is the actual the full bar fight, I think it is. Well, no, yeah,
It's a
somewhere in the
slap fight. It's in the
no,
parking
like
lot.
a little bit after that. So maybe in the middle of the movie,
Yeah.
where first you kind of murder, where he first comes in Dalton, the first big harangue.
Yeah, that doesn't happen
Next,
until like an hour and 20 in.
yeah, right, seriously, yeah, but that's the first full on bar fight, and I actually liked how it was used there because part of the scene is not just Dalton versus the goons. It's like people were like, these are Florida assholes. They're like bar fight, so everybody gets all the background extras get into a fight. So like and so like the way the camera moves, it's fluid in that it's like you're there in a bar, you're seeing this fight. So I like that it in that respect, I like that it, I think it was probably the most effective in that regard to be like putting you in the zone. I would remind it a lot of which we'll get into some more, but the Villainous back in 2017, another kind of experimental action technicality. And I like that movie had like a weird I don't know what it's called officially, but I call it like a second person view, where they kind of made it where the cameraman was like not quite that the cameraman was there in the fight, but he was like, well, yeah, between the heroine and the enemies, the goons, he was like weaving in and out between them, like as if he was like in as if the cameraman was actually fighting also. So it was a kind of it was very unusual like submersion of that.
Very much the way porn camera people have to work. You got to weave in
Yeah.
and out between the action, make it seem like you're actually
Yeah,
part
like
of the fight.
it's not a natural view, but it's like somebody's there, but it's like they're not there. Yeah, like a ghost camera. So yeah. So but this one is like yeah, it felt a little more natural, quote unquote, in that is as if like it's like magical, as a viewer yourself were there dodging punches. They even go so far as like do like a few first person shots of like Connor punching Gyllenhaal Dalton, and you kind of see the fist flying like to the camera. So yeah, I think that was the most effective part for me because I think it all kind of, and plus also it being like the nighttime bar scene, it was dark. So like whatever kind of lighting issues that could be that could make this stuff more apparent and make the seams show more, they're probably hidden with just by being lower in light to
No, I
me.
mean that was something Aaron said too about like the parking lot look, but like honestly, like VFX are actually easier when it's well lit, and then you can kind of tamp it down and post afterwards. Like it's actually hard to separate layers when things are mushy, and you can't pull the subjects out of the background. So I don't think it's I think look it's back to Mike's thing that like everything looks the way it does because that's the way Doug Liman wanted it
Yeah,
to
that's
look.
it. That's it. And that's when people say the fights, because I thought the fights looked kind of unnatural too. Now, I dug that look, but the whole movie looks kind of
Yes.
unnatural. Like
Yes, exactly.
yeah.
That's where I was won over by it as well. The whole movie had a very unnatural camera that is constantly kind of swerving through everything. So I was like, okay, this makes sense. When I first heard about it and the way they were doing it, and frankly, I think a lot of the crankiness that I've been talking about, which Vice had as well, is I think we're just getting a little fed up with the way we're sold movies. And everyone's kind of like getting sick of the talking points. And I will commend Gyllenhaal because on this press tour, he's been like, we're kind of complaining about Dakota Johnson on Madame Web. Like he's been the consummate pro on this press tour. He sticks to these talking points. He hits them and all that stuff. But like everyone, like them trying to say that this fight technology is like never been done in the history of cinema. It starts to get a little bit annoying. It's just like what we're talking about with Alien, where everyone's saying like, oh, it's all practical. And we know that that movie's going to have 3,000 visual effects shots in it. And it's like,
I
so
want to point
we're
out,
all
at
just
least in
getting
regards to
annoyed. We're
that.
getting annoyed. They had fucking slowed down Dramatic Deo in the Beetlejuice trailer. We're all just getting a little bit like collectively annoyed by it. And then our friends get on the Discord and they start fucking selling it to us like they're working for the studio, and you just have to stop and be like, hey, everybody, just stop fucking selling me all the time. So I think that's the crankiness thing that's kind of overbearing on all these movies right now.
I want to point out regards really quick, just with the alien thing, that headline is, there's no other better word for it, so I apologize. It's clickbait. If you actually read the article, he goes much more in depth on that. He's not saying like there's no VFX or anything. He really does, like Fede says, hey, I really love VFX. I go back and use it. That headline is clickbait. That's all I'm saying. But
yeah, no, that's true. That's true. That's fair. I'm just saying, I do think like the way that they're presenting the fight thing to be like it's this huge groundbreaking thing, it's like, guys, can't you just like make an action movie and just sell it as a good action movie? We don't have to say that this is the biggest breakthrough of all time. But no, that's not the way. It's a fucking huckster business. I love the hucksterism. So I'm kind of talking out of both sides of my mouth. But I think that's sort of, okay, all right, already. Just fucking make a cool movie. We don't care about all this shit.
I am curious because it hasn't been brought up this weekend, mostly because I think it died down. But the talk about it going to theaters versus it streaming, do you think it would have played? Looking at how the fight scenes were filmed and the behind the scenes, knowing what we know now, do you think that would have looked better on a big screen? It would have looked worse.
I think it's a little too long for it even on streaming. So I think that would have, I don't know how it would have done with the reaction in a theater. I think it needs 10 minutes out of it to go to a theater.
I just meant the fight scenes in general, like putting that on a big screen.
I know, but it's like at the length it's at, I think it's about a fight to two fights short of what you want. But if you tightened it up, it's probably perfect. But I just think that first hour 20 is a long period of time I'd be curious to see how it would play.
And it's hard to say, I think, how the fights would play in the theater, because the same criticisms that people have here are entirely dependent on what theater you go to. You know, everybody's like, oh, this was shot for the big screen. I don't know. Have you ever gone to an AMC theater that that projects through a layer of goat sweat? Like there's no guarantee that because something should play well in the theater that your experience is going to be good. So it's really hard when people say, how do you think, see it on the biggest screen possible? I always kind of bristle at that, because I'm like, yeah, if you're paying $25 to see it on a pristine IMAX, like an actual, not FOMAX, a proper IMAX 70 millimeter thing, you're probably going to have a pretty good time. If you're seeing it at my local fucking Cinemark, it's gonna look like it was, projected through Vaseline. I really quick, Vice, I have one joke. I'm sitting on it and I can't come up with an appropriate point to get it out, but I've got to get it out because you said that it's shot in Florida. That's what makes it great. America's Wang, and that it's actually shot on the foreskin of America's foreskin. And it's not, because it's the Keys. So it's actually the yellowish gross discharge from America's Wang is where it takes place. I couldn't sit on that. I had to get that out.
I asked this question in the Discord and no one responded, but that was another thing for this that my wife and I were talking about. Like, the bar doesn't feel like a real place that exists, and the inhabitants that go there don't feel like anything recognizable to me as an American. Did you guys feel like that was authentic?
I actually, that's a good point, because I actually look at it not as, if you look at the bar from the original Roadhouse versus the bar from this one, this bar feels like a tourist bar. Like when I went to the
Bahamas, Carlos and Charlie's. Like Carlos and Charlie's is the chain that's in the Caribbean, and they have sawdust on the ground. But I was there when I was 10. People weren't like headbutting each other and fucking. That's what I mean. Like the redneck fighter biker thing, like that makes sense. Tourist bars, no one comes in and just fucking starts smashing them up like that.
Except even the original. Like, has anybody else here besides me actually worked in a bar? Not like saying that to be like flexing, but
I have.
Okay. So even the original is not really very authentic. You know, Vice, you said Post Malone doesn't look like he's a fight. You know what he looks like? He looks like a fucking bouncer, because bouncers are big, doughy, tatted guys. They do not look like Jake Gyllenhaal, and they do not fucking look like Patrick Swayze
or Sam Elliott.
Yeah. Like, no bouncer has ever fucking looked like that, right? Like, they are, because honestly, as a bouncer, your job is 90% intimidation. Dalton, the entire joke of the original Roadhouse is everybody thought Dalton would be taller. He's not intimidating anybody,
He's
right?
Just so pretty,
Right.
yeah.
Like your entire, what you want for a bouncer is you want the biggest, fattest, scariest looking motherfucker you can get to just walk over when somebody's getting lippy. And then, like, if they have to manhandle them, they have the mass to do it. So to me, the original isn't very authentic, but I do get what you're saying, Liam, in terms of like the shitty biker bar versus the bar that does look like, because when you first asked that, I wanted to say there's bars that look like that in Mexico all the time. Like I go to a bunch of them, but then I realized what you're saying is that, but those bars aren't going to have people like headbutting each other and trying to stab each other with broken glass.
Right.
But for me, that also goes back to the whole unnatural vibe of the movie. Of course, it's an unnatural bar. Of course, it's an unrealistic bar. Because
I mean, yeah, the bad guy's getting a fucking shave on his yacht in the waves, which I actually liked that scene. I thought that was, you know, Billy, that movie knew what, that, like you said, it knew the assignment of a Billy, good bad guy scene.
Billy Magnussen is great. Like I've had people get mad at me when I say he has the most punchable face in Hollywood. I make it very clear to say he has the most punchable face. Not I hate Billy Magnussen. I find him off-putting, annoying, and absolutely almost unwatchable. And guess what? Most of the characters he plays, off-putting, annoying, and absolutely unwatchable. He knows the assignment. He knows who he is as an actor. I'm certain he's a very nice guy. He seems like a very consummate professional. People love working with him. I don't hate him. I just want to punch him. Like, I'd buy him a beer afterwards, but if I ever met him, I would be like, dude, I'm sorry. I have to fucking punch you right now.
So I want to kind of talk about that. So now we're going to, like, the philosophical narrative stuff of it all, because that's kind of what's been throwing me off. Like, and the thing is, the two big things is Dalton and Conor McGregor as Knox. Because, like, you know, we mentioned, like, McGregor, Knox, knows what kind of movie he's in. He's this cartoon character. He's like, he looks, his arms, you mentioned Popeye, his arms are literally swollen, like, and he walks like fucking, he walks arms akimbo. He's like, he's so out of this world, you know, a bit larger than life. And that matches the unnatural part that the movie's going for. Even though just to be clear, terrible actor. He's like, he barely understand. Like, he's not even an accent. He sucks as an actor. But he's not there to act. He had to like be himself, basically.
And what did you say about, you said it was like Venom, Bluto,
oh,
Popeye?
Yeah.
What
like,
was it?
It's like if Bluto had possessed Popeye, but not just like took his body, but like possessed in the way like Venom has, like, is up Tom Hardy's asshole. Like, he's like wigged out. He's like wigged out Popeye. He's like fucking sweaty and gross.
He does walk like he's being puppeted by like something that's going up his ass to his brain.
He looks so weird in this movie. Like, he also looks like he skipped like fucking leg day. Except he didn't. His legs are huge, but he is so disproportionate upper to lower in this movie.
I want
to
point out
weird.
When he first appeared and Seuss, she came in. She came in and she saw him and she's like, "Is he South African?" Because she couldn't get a she couldn't get a beat on his accent. And I'm like, I think he's Irish. Like, he's bad, but he's also the most enjoyable part of the movie. Like, he's
So that's what I said. Like, you know, he's there, this big cartoon presence, and that kind of works for how weird the movie feels. But then, so I like how do I say this? I like what they were going for, but I don't know if it works in this movie. What they do with Dalton, whereas, you know, like. The original Swayze character doesn't have so much of a sad story, but like, just, you know, he's kind of a mysterious romantic, but he's also like, you know, a deadly accurate warrior, and like in like in this one, like, so it's, of course, spoiler, like the whole thing is that this Dalton is a UFC fighter. He killed somebody in the ring. That's his whole, like, that's his low point in his life. That's why he's like, that's why he seems a bum now. He's a vagabond, like, because he's like, he's kind of like living a no life because he killed somebody in the ring in a profession. And it haunts him. So they have this kind of thing, but at the same time, though, it's Gyllenhaal. He's his beautiful smile. He's like very charming, very affable. So like, and like, I think the idea was that he's using this like kind of affable personality to hide this like tortured soul he has, that he killed somebody like that. You know, his like his fists are registered lethal weapons or whatever, you know, like that whole like old 80s cliche. But so, and there's a point where I guess, well, it's a couple points. Where you kind of see him snap, you see the switch go off, and you're like, wait, no, this guy's fucking insane. Like, and you kind of see, like, you see how dangerous he really is. But I feel like that part of it, that whatever story element they're going for, is so out of whack with the vibe of the movie. Where, like, he's not like, well, you know, like it would have been like more, I guess, more involved with like if he played it like Riggs, you know, in Lethal Weapon, like Mel Gibson did back in the day. Like if he was kind of this live wire, that would have made a little more sense to the vibe of the movie's going for. Whereas here he's like chill and reserved, and there's this kind of really tragic backstory to it. Here, you know, good reminder. Nobody saw the movie. Nobody saw the movie. I think it was 2015 or 2017. Southpaw, which also starred Jake Gyllenhaal. Well, he famously he got super ripped because of a boxer. It's a box movie star directed by Antoine Fuqua.
Yeah,
And I like the.
that was the birth of Jack Gyllenhaal, his jet, you know, his ripped twin brother, Jack Gyllenhaal.
Yeah,
That's where he first was born.
and I quite like that. But, you know, it didn't get a lot of press or a lot of word of mouth. But it's a pretty serious, straightforward drama. But you know, it's kind of this fuck up boxer who's trying to win his daughter back. He'll get custody of his daughter back by, you know, being a pro again. And I feel like that they were trying to he maybe he was in hoping he was trying to maybe getting that character into this one, and maybe it felt off because like in other words, you gotta do one or the other. You gotta be a wild card, or be this like you know like this stoic menace, you know like this just like the cold-blooded drifter. And I feel like trying to balance it between the two makes the whole thing kind of feel off.
See,
So
I.
then,
Oh,
when
sorry. Go ahead, Vice.
well, then, to put in, but then when he's fighting McGregor finally with Knox, that's when it kind of comes alive. Where it's like, because Knox being an insane asshole himself, that's when he kind of goes off the rails. He can let loose.
There's
So
something wrong with you. Me too.
So that part when it makes sense. But yeah, otherwise, but throughout the proceedings, like you know, this part where he has like he's talking to like a little girl and his dad, her dad is like, yeah, he's it just again, it's. The trying to balance those two things in this character to make it different from the first one, I just think it was too off for me. But like the parts themselves, those elements, I like them on paper, but this didn't come out in execution properly for me.
I do have to, for me, I have to disagree on that because, first of all, don't forget Dalton in the original also has a tragic backstory. He killed somebody. That's why he's a wandering nomad. You know, when a guy pulls a gun on you, what do? You either die or you kill the fucker. Or no, you rip the fucker's throat out. I thought they really nailed it. The scene where he's about to leave, which is a very different thing because. You know, he's actually like this Dalton is not interested in getting involved. He's ready to bounce. He's gonna get the bus. And the way he flips the switch when he was like, you know, I was about to leave. You actually had me. And then and the way you like he pulls like an almost, I thought, Edward Norton level like body shift in terms of that part of him coming out. So I think it hits earlier than you saw it. At least it did for me, Vice. And then from then on, he's pretty much in full psychopath mode for the last like 30 minutes of the movie.
And then because
yeah, he's killing men and he's hiding their bodies in coolers and stuff. Like I quite enjoyed that part too.
I was kind of surprised
I
he
think
didn't
I
do
agree
anything
with
with the
Mike
gator.
on that. Well, they did do something with the gator. They
Yeah,
set
I
it
thought
up
they'd do
like
another
10
thing.
times and then, you know, I felt like, but yeah, I guess your point.
I thought it was funny that he was able to he knows how to like make explosives work. I don't know, this is not me streetwatching. He's like just it was just funny to be like what kind of man is this actually? He's like, is he that much of a psycho? Like, because he's not a, like special forces guy. He's not an ex.
He's like on 8chan. He's a fucking weirdo. Guys on some weird Reddit threads. Don't
Which
go
one's
too
better,
deep
pipe
into his
bomb?
search history.
I'm just asking questions. How to make a bomb? I'm just asking questions.
Like I said, like the latter half when it comes to live, where it's like, okay, he can go full psycho. And he has the proper antagonist to match up with that energy, but you just like you said, it's just an hour and a half to get there, or an hour plus to get there. It's like fuck, what are you
Yeah, pacing
Yeah.
on this movie's all wrong. I the biggest like I think it's a pretty for me it was a pretty solid 4-star movie. Like I loved the shit out of it, but even I will fully admit pacing is all wrong. This is not a 2-hour movie. This is not a movie that warrants 2 hours, and it's not paced well for a 2-hour movie. I completely agree. I love a good slow burn like revenge story. Like I love Man on Fire, and that movie takes its sweet ass time. But it's also paced like that because it spends so much time investing in Denzel and Dakota Fanning's relationship. The one thing I will say, Liam, you brought up this point is you're getting tired of how we're being marketed movies. And I completely agree with you on this movie, because to me, the marketing, the thing that really sold me was not any of this fight technology or even the fights or whatever. It was Jake going, before we start, how's your insurance? Is it good?
Right.
Do you have dental? Is there a hospital close by? I'm asking, is there a hospital close by? Like, that sold me more than anything. And that's what I was saying earlier, way back at the start. The greatest special effect in this movie is Jake Gyllenhaal. And that's the reason to watch the movie I've seen some people say that they thought he was just kind of okay, which again, they're entitled to their opinion, but I'm sitting here going, man, if this movie has some other bland, boring-ass white guy, not like borderline unhinged Jake Gyllenhaal, it's almost unwatchable.
Agreed. Yeah. And as the meathead discussion, we must applaud that he is in fantastic shape, and he's not like hiding it in fucking long-sleeve turtlenecks like has become the sort of fucking modus operandi lately. He's always in a button up, and he's always got a well-oiled titty hanging out of it that's all muscled up. So
you have an example of this? This feels personal. This feels very specific.
What are you talking about? Other movies? I mean, all the fucking, I've just been annoyed with Statham. He's all of a sudden become Mr. Bashful. I didn't see The Beekeeper yet, though. So
he's Mr. Bashful in that. He's geared up in that entire fucking movie. Like, he is completely covered in tack gear for the entire movie.
That, or he's dappered up. Yeah, he's definitely not showing his skin anymore, which is a shame. He looks pretty good.
And it was my complaints of Cena in his last two movies that, there's just no sleeveless action. It was like, dude, what are you fucking going to the gym and doing all that fucking shit for?
I was
going to
say, which is weird with Cena. With Statham, you know, he's old. I can see if maybe, like Hugh Jackman, he's just like, I don't want to get in that fucking cut shit. I'm not going to dehydrate myself and do all that bullshit anymore. We saw Cena naked at the Oscars. He still clearly looks like that.
He got naked in the Barbie. You know, he's naked in the fucking the freelance trailer in a naked scene, but in his action scenes, he's not. Yeah. He's not showing the guns. And so anyway, this is, again, just the hats off to the physical specimen Gyllenhaal in this. He looked great.
I like how in the beginning when you first see him, he scares off Post Malone, takes over his shirt. Like the point is that you see that they know that he's that fighter, that killer guy. But like, no, it's like, he's also like, look at these abs, baby. Look at this meat.
Well, that's because they even, the crowd even boos, because the whole point is he comes in the baggy hoodie. So they're all betting and they don't think he's anything. And then when he's and all the bets are in, and then he takes the hoodie off. And so like half the crowd starts booing because they realize they've just been had.
And also, I think it's like, he's a murderer. So they're like, oh, fuck that.
Yeah. The commission thereof is,
The other thing, let me just say one thing that I loved, and then I think I'll have said my piece. I do not think enough people are talking about the super, and again, spoilers, the super fantastic eco stabby stabby that Jake does to take out Conor McGregor at the end of this. Like, I thought that was Liam's looking at me with a furrowed brow. You didn't think that looked very,
no, I thought it was good. I just, we actually kind of have a similar scene. I just don't want anyone to think, that there was any, influence.
Well, I think the influence clearly goes from your star to this movie, not the way around.
Sure.
I thought it was a very Raid-esque multiple stab. Just, it was just a great finishing move. Like, if you're gonna take out a bad guy as insane as McGregor is in this,
it's great. But then he survives.
I am not a fan of that. That was bullshit. I agree. Yeah. But Vice, go ahead.
I guess I would say that's kind of where I'm feeling a little off. Like, that scene itself is great. Maybe I am thinking of the past movie too much, because in the Swayze movie, the finishing move was the throat rip, the one he kind of implies beforehand, and he does it, and he's like sad about it, I guess, you know, like he's like, I did it again, fuck, you know, like that's so like, you know, he's a sad war point in that regard. He's like, he doesn't want to hurt people.
Is he sad as he's screaming Wesley and like sending Jimmy's body across the lake? I think we're past sad Dalton at that point in the movie.
Well, because I saw the scene recently, like a few months ago, and I was like, maybe just because it's Swayze. He's like, he's all into it. Like, he's dramatic, and you know, he's like, you see the sweat and the tears and the girl. It's all very, very dramatic, even though it's like, I'm gonna fuck you or whatever. Like, it's a very, he plays it very dramatic.
We haven't, yeah, we haven't mentioned the lack of "I used to fuck guys like you" in prison in this movie, which is definitely brings it down a half star.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, so, but you know, yeah, I guess if I'm thinking it in the past, it doesn't work. But if I think it as, you know, this guy's fucking insane, it totally makes sense that, you know, this guy's a fucking feral beast who makes pipe bombs and shit.
Also, going back to punchable faces, Travis Van Winkle shows up.
It was I like fist pumped when
you barely see his face.
Yeah, but it's fine. He's still noticeably Travis Van Winkle, and he is maybe the proto Billy Magnuson, the biggest douchebag actor of the last 20 years. And I was so happy to see him. And I'm like, there's another punchable face.
sorry, so I didn't mean to touch on
the rest of the cast real quick. Danielle Melchior. She's cool. Like, she's a love interest last doctor, you know, kind of, and it was weird to me because, like, and I think this is, a lot of the people in this movie, maybe Connor and Billy aside, they feel, again, their charm is off. Like, I saw her, I think her big debut, or at least her big American debut, was in the Suicide Squad as, like, the rat catcher character. And it's funny because, like, she was very charismatic in that one. Like, she's like, you know, she was engaging in that one. And here she kind of feels here, I guess, and just as love interest. So it was just, I don't know, again, more of the off vibes that I'm feeling that whatever they were trying to do, maybe it wasn't translating properly.
I mean, she's like absent from the last 45 minutes of the movie.
Yeah.
So they just kind of, there's a bunch of plot lines that are cut out for a movie that's long. The bar owner, Frankie, like,
yeah,
there's a whole plot line with that that's just completely, you can tell they're missing like three or four scenes.
I was going to say, I think one of the big problems with the movie can just be summed up by the fact that we're an hour into this discussion and we're now just bringing up Daniela Melchior and Jessica Williams. And that is definitely a problem with the movie, as opposed to, say, Kelly Lynch in the original, where she is an indelible, incredible presence in that movie. So I'm with you, Vice. But you continue.
Yeah, there's nothing. They're not doing anything wrong per se. It's just like the way the movie has them, uses them. It's like it's just kind of there. You know, I think who was it? Joaquin Almeida. Like, he's one of the the big bosses. You know, and yeah,
he's the big boss in Fast X or Fast Five.
Yeah, he's a superstar, and he's also great at doing like character villain work. But again, he's just kind of like there as like kind of a stock character villain. So it's like,
I did like the way his first scene was shot, which with
the car, right?
Kind of unnatural camera. Like he's always in out of focus in an over, and he calls himself Big Dick. And it's just a very like specific stylized way to shoot that scene. And so that's kind of the stuff that I thought was cool throughout the whole movie. You know, that it's not just standard boilerplate. You know, like Amazon dad show thing, even though the plot kind of is.
I also feel like Daniela Melchior is just, everybody seems to love her, and I do too, because she's a very impressive screen presence. But this is not the first movie to misuse her, because I forgot that she was in Fast X until I just pulled her up on IMDb. I forgot that she was in Guardians of the Galaxy 3 until I just pulled her up. So
she's in a bit part in that.
Yeah, she's a major character in Fast X, and I fucking
she was the best part of Fast X. I actually do remember that. I actually think she's better in Fast X than this. So
wait, which who is she again in that one?
She's
Dom's like niece or this something.
No,
oh,
she's,
yeah.
She's the sister of why am I drawing a blank on her name? Hemsworth's wife. She's her little sister. So
that scene was good. That was better than I thought she was in this. I mean, it wasn't that she was bad. She just, that scene had popped.
No, and my point was not a criticism of her. It's, I think she's still waiting. She's still waiting for that role that really takes advantage of her in a way that, you know, she needs an Isa Gonzalez role in Ambulance to I think really, really pop.
We needed to see her get abducted. They just basically said she's abducted. And then it was like, is she not? And then like, you know, 20 minutes later, she's at the bottom of a boat, but like, they just kept her off screen for a very long period of time that kind of hurt her ability to, I think, matter.
Also, I think as well with that, the kid and the father whose shop that they torch, there's a moment where I feel like Jake is going to go visit them in the hospital. But again, they're in like two scenes in the beginning they burn down the shop and then they pop up at the end and then they're done. It's like they're like
That
maybe.
those scenes absolutely were shot. I think there's a bunch of stuff like that. The say, like I said, with the Frankie where she's lying to him, and then all of a sudden she's like, "So I lied to you," and you're like, "Wait, what?" There's other stuff here that's on the cutting room floor, and it's it again to that unwieldiness of just like,
Which again is a Doug Liman. I mean, that's just a Doug Liman. Every Doug Liman movie has been an editing disaster. Like it's, you know,
I wouldn't say like Edge of Tomorrow's an editing
no,
disaster or
I
anything
mean
like
the
that.
editing, process, his filmmaking process is so chaotic.
Yes,
And
that
that the editing process is, I think Edge of Tomorrow, what they crafted, but again, depending on what you listen to, he may or may not have had anything to do with actually crafting that movie.
So the first AD of AVPR had just done Mr. and Mrs. Smith. So I had heard all these
Real
kind of
shit.
crazy stories, from Mr. and Mrs. Smith about like, Doug's process and Brad getting very fed up with it and stuff like that. So yeah, I've heard of it.
Wait,
Yeah,
so
yeah.
last thing stuff for the cast. Shout out to Arturo Castro. He plays one of the funny goon. You know, you see in the trailer. He's like kind of like who's kind of take kind of falls in love with the with Dalton a little bit. Like, you know, he's like getting his ass whooped. You know, I think that's a great bit. I love that bit. Like, just
That was great.
take you
I
for a
agree.
ride. I have to kick my ass.
Hey man,
You know,
are you gonna kill me? Not if you tell me where. Well,
that
I don't know, but thanks for not killing me, man. I'm
thing.
going. I just wanted to ride a bike, man.
Yeah, that was a great bit. I like that part. Yeah, and the other two, the last two is Lucas Gage and Dominic Columbus. They're the two young guys who are like the new bouncers or whatever. I apparently Lucas Cage is like famous like as like in the young teen crowd, I guess. He's been a couple shows. I guess he's also like a writer producer himself. I honestly want to see more of them actually. Even though they don't really do much in the movie, they're just kind of like maybe again it's part of the what's on the floor. They seem like they were like his proteges. They like he teaches them how to fight good or whatever. And like, but they don't really like expand it other than like they're in a fight once and then you don't see him again. But yeah, I was kind of like, are they gonna do like a Roadhouse Legacy? Is
Yeah.
that where this is going?
Lucas Gage is a big Sam Levinson guy, so all the Euphoria heads and stuff love him because he's in Euphoria. He was in
White Lotus.
Assassination Nation, he's in White Lotus.
Okay, yeah.
So yeah, he's big amongst the older teen set.
He had that big thing a couple of years ago where he was on that Zoom call with the
Yes.
casting.
That was him?
And
Wow.
And
But yeah,
I
I'm just
actually
saying like,
wonder if this was the movie for that.
oh
I
yeah,
was
right.
actually.
No, it was some TV show.
Okay.
I don't
I
think
guess
he
like,
got the job.
yeah. But yeah, you know, like as far as like, you know, this being it's not a legacy sequel. It's just a new movie. But like, I do like that idea, even though they don't do it. Like, of having like, even I don't know. I guess like this is the weird thing of remakes nowadays. Like, it's definitely coasting off. I would say. Partly coasting off of the nostalgia of the original, but they also very clearly doing things for a newer generation. Like it's actively you see it in both behind the scenes and on screen. So I would have hoped that they would had the young kids do more stuff to do, like we're the next we're the next warrior poets or whatever. I don't know, but
I think the biggest problem is just definitely this idea that, I think one of the fundamental differences between this one and the original is as great as Swayze is in the original, and he is great. Patrick Swayze is also not the most dynamic ranged, was not RIP, the most dynamic ranged actor. I don't think that's anything controversial to say that. Watch him try and cry in Ghost. But what they do is they surround him by an absolute fucking, murderer's row of memorable character actors and give them just enough to flesh them all out. There are no secondary characters in this movie that are as memorable as any of the secondary characters in the first one.
Fair, yeah.
And obviously, the lack of a Wade Garrett character kind of hurts it. Except where you do have the problem here then is Patrick Swayze is a very reserved, very soulful, not very emotive actor, and so you can have Sam Elliott come. What the fuck? How do you do a Wade Garrett with Jake Gyllenhaal's Dalton? Right? Like, how do you do that scene-stealing character with Jake Gyllenhaal? You really can't. And so I think that's part of the problem is Gyllenhaal does. I think, I don't know if it was a conscious decision to say, we're going to shift and make this less of an ensemble piece and just let Jake go, which again, if you're a Jake head like me, that's great. But I don't think there's any disputing that the colorful characters in the supporting cast in the original are far superior to what you see in this one.
Yeah.
Let's wrap this one up. Wrap it up.
We are going almost as long as the actual movie. We are about to hit the running time of the original Roadhouse. So it's probably time to move on. All right. Well, obviously the other thing that came up, and it came up in the Roadhouse discussion, because there was the whole controversy of them using AR to do the ADR or AI to do the ADR during the strikes. But the biggest thing that, of course, came to the crux on this is Late Night with the Devil. It came out that they used a generative AI to create a couple of the interstitials that are seen in the movie. For those who don't know, the entire movie takes place during an episode of a Tonight Show-like talk show. At least that's my understanding. I have not seen the movie. I was not ever going to see the movie, which is one of the things that set me off, is people saying, just admit you like the movie. I'm like, I was never going to fucking see this movie. Not my kind of horror movie. The entire thing takes place during a Tonight Show. And so there's interstitials, and they use generative AI to create those. And everybody went apeshit for the most part, calling to boycott the movie. It's your call. The one rant I have is people calling to pirate the movie, and their justification for it was that the cast and crew have already been paid, so it's okay. Well, you really don't ever get to take a stance against piracy on that. In that case, I mean, no, Liam, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but is the cast and crew already been paid a good justification for piracy?
No.
Can you explain a little bit as to why that might be the case?
Well, I mean, I know piracy is such a hot button thing. It's crazy because if you want to see more of the thing that you like, you have to support it. Otherwise, people won't make more of it. It's fairly simple. There's a reason why there's not Boyka 5, 6, and 7 already. There's a reason there's not a Raid 3. It was pirated to death. It died on the vine. And those are great movies, let alone movies that are struggling to find an audience.
And the Raid 2 is actually one, I remember hearing an interview with Gareth, where you can actually track the box office numbers and see where it dropped when it leaked. You can see it opened big and then completely dropped because that it leaked that weekend.
I actually wasn't aware of that. That's very surprising. I was not aware that piracy was the reason we don't have a Raid 3.
Yeah, I've talked to Scott about Boyka, and so has Mike, and it's the same thing. Everyone loves it. Everyone loves it. And then they stole it. It's great.
And the biggest problem I have with saying it in this case, because like you said, Liam, if you want the stuff you like to get made, you have to keep doing it. People here are saying, well, we want to send a message that we don't want them to use generative AI. You are not going to be hurting the money people making this movie by pirating it. All you are going to do is guarantee that the people involved in this movie are not going to get to work again, including your, like, the internet's boyfriend, David Dashamalian, right?
He's actually who I feel the worst for, to be honest with you. And he handled it so well in his interview when people were asking him about it. But to be a character actor who gets this break to be a lead and have it, the movie get such great reviews and be so well received, and then have this sort of, I think the context of when they use the generative AI is important, because a lot of people that are super strident about it now, like, you guys all fucking did those avatars and that dumbass shit when it came out, and everyone was like, oh, this is cool. Like, a lot of people did that. And changed their avatars on Twitter and were fucking around with it. And that's about around the time those guys used it to put it into the movie 2 years ago.
And the thing for me with this is this is the problem with a lot of these types of boycotts and these types of protests. People are not asking the right questions, and they're not aiming at the right targets. Their guns are aiming in completely the wrong direction. And a lot of that comes from a complete lack of understanding on how the technology even works and how the technology is even being used, which I don't get. I've never understood when somebody is like, I don't like AI, I don't want to learn anything about it. You can't defend yourself against a knife if you don't know how a knife works. You can't defend yourself against a gun if you don't know how a gun works. You can't do anything to stop, control, or regulate AI if you don't at least have a basic understanding on how AI works. You are going into a fight blind and unprotected. And so what I will.
Counterpoint, putting your head, you're burying your head in the sand feels pretty good.
Which is why I call you a Luddite, because for those who don't know, here's who the Luddites were. The Luddites were a group of workers in the in 1800s England who were massively opposed to modern industrialization. And so they would actually go in and destroy machinery, destroy factories,
They were
destroy stuff
right.
like that. How did that work for them? Well, the answer is we are living in a modern industrialized society and they all got killed. Like literally, they were executed, they were killed, they were lynched. There's just a whole bunch of stuff that it did not end well for them because they never even bothered to understand how this technology was going to affect and change things. The people that actually won during that were the people that realized modern industrialization can help us justify things like the 5-day work week, the 8-hour work day, child labor laws, things that can actually make technology morally better. And that's the problem here. If you're starting from a position of AI in and of itself is evil, you have lost that fight. That fight is over. You're done. You're tilting at windmills. You are a Luddite. What you should be doing is learning about it so that you can help craft rigorous ethical standards on how both machine learning and generative AI can be used, because they are going to be used. You will not win this fight. You cannot. It's over. The time to have that fight was 5 years ago when you weren't even
I don't
aware.
even think there's a possibility to have won the fight. And so I'm
No.
not disagreeing with you because but I'm going to explain a little bit like my evolution on it, just because everyone saw me on I've been very stridently anti-AI from the beginning. And I think what the process was of burying my head in the sand is because it just creates so much anxiety in me about any type of future for not only my own career, but my kids are pretty artistically inclined. My son loves to do music. My daughter lo loves to act, loves to perform. So it's like there is a sort of existential fear with it. So it's just sort of like, I don't want to fucking learn about this right now. I just want to get my next movie up and running. And I fucking hate this shit and I wish it wasn't happening. And I feel like it's all being backed by the worst people who are just trying to disrupt like my industry and fucking suck all the money out of it and leave people with less jobs and just kind of like cater to the lowest common denominator for dumbass shit. So and basically, like I said, turn the entire industry into YouTube, where everyone has to work, like a dog to make something every single day to get feedback, instead of like taking a year to make a movie and make something cool. It's like, no, you don't have that time anymore. The VFX, everything has to be done faster. You have to fucking make, YouTube is the future. And I think that probably is with the future, and it's sad. But I also look back, like I was talking to a woman last night, my wife's friend, and she worked at a record company pre-Napster. And she was just talking about how fucking great it was. It's like everyone complains about the record company unless you're like at the record company and you have like five A&R people on your tour, like making you feel special, making everything, figuring all this shit out for you. Like it was, there was so much money and it was such a great time. And we're all kind of in these interesting areas where I grew up without internet, to being a teenager where internet was happening, and now coming into the industry where VFX were having a big breakthrough that had a lot to do with my career, to now this like AI. I just feel like it's another kind of dividing line to like pre-internet, post-internet. Now we've got AI. It is that big of a thing and it is that scary. But the reason why I guess I kind of would say not softened on it, but saw it being used in application is that when I went to go do Warpath, like a lot of these meetings that you have with departments, it's always traditionally I talk to you guys about Miro boards where I just grab all this reference images and I put it all on a board. And because it's a sequel, I have so much imagery from the other movies and the cast and the actors. And so I'm doing that, and I don't use any generative AI for it, but the people that would come in, they would like, it's kind of very cute, actually. They always like to make these decks when they do the show and tells, and they always kind of put their own poster of the movie on it. And they'd always have like their own poster that they made of like Warpath with like Eco and like an alien ship and stuff. And it would, and so like they were using it in their reference images. And I was kind of like, but I got it. To me, that wasn't taking anyone's job per se. It was helping those people do their job for them. I don't need to see an alien ship and this mesh together in a kind of bad facsimile of kit bashing, but some people do. I think I have a pretty good imagination, so I don't need this stuff, but I get why people are using it for those purposes where they're basically, it's kind of the next step of a Google search where you're getting very specific on your Google search. And then Google just says, is this what you want? And they kind of mesh a couple of the different images together and do it. So that was where I was like, okay, I'm seeing that. I get it. I'm not going to sit here and be like, hey guys, are you aware of my Twitter account? I'm very anti this because they're putting it in these decks and stuff. And it didn't really, I think, have any bearing on the movie, but at the same time, I was kind of seeing like, okay, this is being adopted by people within the industry in little ways. And then working on the edit, you know, my editor who's worked on a bunch of big movies, if you want to look at his IMDb, and he's like, oh yeah, all these big movies use AI voice for the temp screenings, which are the ones that you're showing producers. I mean, famously he said like, I think he worked on Rise of Skywalker. I don't think we had this yet. But they would do like temp screenings every week. So they would have so much time, an entire department built on getting post-viz and getting all this stuff in line for the temp screenings that they would have to send an output, I guess, to like Bob Iger or whatever. That's not the case. So they weren't doing the AI ADR, but he had, you know, basically hit a button and all of a sudden I heard Eco's voice say, hey, Liam, it was great making this movie with you, you sexy motherfucker. And I was like, what the fuck was that? And he basically had done it. So I was like, oh, you know, we don't need to use that. That's okay. Like, you know, we don't even have that much ADR. But like, I'm seeing all the different people in different departments are using it. And I get why it's useful. There was that fall movie with I think it's Scott Mann who was saying, you know, we're going to, and that's sort of the big, I think, interesting application for it right now is doing AI, basically moving people's mouths to match sync so that your movie can no longer be subtitled, but the dub can fit the mouths on every single territory in the world. And so, you know, when I first saw that, you know, interesting to the Town podcast, like my initial thing was glass half empty. Like, oh God, that just means like every movie can always be manipulated with to the end of the time. And that's true. And I still think that is going to be a problem because, you know, even where we talk about where like social mores change and stuff and people edit stuff from the past, you know, this technology getting cheaper and more accessible, it does kind of like remove the permanence of a film in some ways. And you could always be tweaking with it. And it's no longer this touchstone that we could get on a podcast and all talk about because we all watch the same film this weekend. It's all fucking, oh, well, mine had, you know, my dad playing that character. And you're like, what the fuck, you know? So like, I don't know. Like, again, I'm still very, very, very pessimistic and kind of, you know, I feel grateful that I got to make movies pre this technology is what I'll say. The positive of it, I'm glad that I came up in a time without this. And I feel bad for the people that are coming into their own with this. I'm sure it's going to have a lot of interesting applications right now where we're in this sort of interim time. I don't necessarily like where things are going, but I think especially like trying to punish those guys for using it for those interstitials, that every other big, like huge budget movie, like a Roadhouse or like these big Disney movies is using different parts of it along their pipeline right now. it's kind of like it's the wrong target, like Mike was saying, but I also kind of understand why. So I don't really have like the great answer for it either way. I just kind of I feel bad for for everybody involved in that project, that they kind of became the example.
The flashpoint. Yeah,
Yeah.
you're
And the
start.
issue
Sorry, go
is
ahead,
that
Max.
the yeah, no, the issue is it's not as black and white, which is sort of why I didn't really say much on it because there are hard lines to draw, but there's also some understanding, and there's definitely, I think, to some extent, argument to be made in regards to the film. If it was so minuscule, why didn't you just hire somebody?
Sure, but the problem with that is that's also an anti-inherent accessibility argument, because by that token, and I will get into the difference, give me a few to get into the difference between why generative AI is a bigger problem than machine learning. But by that same token, why didn't Sean Baker rent a camera instead of shooting Tangerine on an iPhone? Technology marches ever forward, and the people that move it forward and use it are not the big studios. It's the lower budget people that this technology opens up accessibility to them. And both machine learning and generative AI will do that. Now, that being said, Liam, you are with everything you just said, you are now like aiming at the right targets and asking the right questions, right? Because the problem is, and this is where we ruined the fucking internet, is this is being controlled and driven by the worst of the worst of humanity. Because everybody wanted to stick their head in the sand and ignore AI, what has happened is the worst of the technocrats, the capitalist immoral technocrats, are the ones that control the technology now. And so it is being used by the worst of the worst, just like when we acquiesced to let five guys like Mark Zuckerberg and Elon Musk own the entire fucking internet. That's over. The internet is broken. The glory and the hope and the dream of the World Wide Web is gone. It's dead. We lost it. The idea that information is out there is over. And that's where
I'm seeing my Encarta 2000 CD-ROM burning as you
It's
speak.
literally that is what happened. We do have a chance to make some differences here if we focus on the things that can realistically be accomplished, like strict ethical guidelines. For instance, it would not be hard to mandate, if these corporations didn't suck, that every time they used AI, that had to be disclosed. Right, you release a new movie or a new commercial, and you have a little thing at the bottom, just like you have a thing that says professional stuntmen do not try at home, or these are
No
actors.
animals were harmed in the making of
You
this
have a
movie.
thing that says parts of this were made using generative AI, right? Because what everybody is terrified about, rightfully so, is we will no longer know what is and isn't real. And that is a very real concern. That is a very real fear. That is a fear that people are legitimate. I am not some like I love technology, but I'm not some guy who's like, I'm not a tech utopianist, right? Like I think there's very real concerns with technology and this technology. That's why we need the rules. We don't need boycotts. We need rules. The learning example from Late Night with the Devil should be, how the fuck did this happen and we figured it out a day before the movie came out? Like, why was this not something that was released and required for them to say, we use generative AI to make these interstitials? That's where the gap is. That's where the problem is. That's where the change needs to happen, because we're just never going to get rid of it. It's never going to happen. And in fact, calling for boycotts is actually going to accomplish the exact opposite, because what it's going to do is drive the use of generative AI even deeper under the surface and make these companies be even smarter about hiding how they use it and burying it in a way that we will truly never know what is and isn't real anymore. So, like, you're actually trying to accomplish the exact opposite of what you're worried about. The other thing I will say is, as far as losing jobs, I'm sorry, guys, technology always costs jobs. Look up the difference between technological unemployment and structural unemployment. Technology always costs jobs. You know who costs jobs? Greg and Colin Strauss. They cost people jobs. All right. The birth of the internet cost people jobs. The creation of the automobile and the steam engine cost people jobs. Now, in a perfect world, and I'm not an economist, so everything I'm saying, do understand, I am saying this in the simplest ways possible, because that's how much I understand them. But I still feel like I understand them better than 97% of the people having this conversation. Technological unemployment typically will shift. We'll lose jobs in one area and we'll increase jobs in another. So technological unemployment typically creates structural stability, as opposed to structural unemployment, which is unemployment that is built into the very nature of society. Now, the problem is, not to go on a rant, what people are very worried about here is because AI is being controlled by the fucking douchebags, they're not going to use it to shift that employment to a different section, because they're not going to apply it in a democratized, true capitalist way where we should all have equal access to this technology and this ability to shift sectors. That's a very real concern. Once again, your problem with that ain't late night with the devil. That's the fucking Microsoft computer that we're having this conversation on. Like, one of the things that I really, really was driven nuts by seeing this weekend is people literally tweeting on a platform owned by one of the worst purveyors of artificial intelligence, Elon Musk, getting their information through one of the other worst purveyors of artificial intelligence, Google, and doing so typically from the third worst purveyor of artificial intelligence, their fucking iPhone. Like, let alone if you're on your desktop and it's Microsoft. Like, I know this is impossible, but this is why calls for boycotts are almost never effective. You need to boycott Apple, Google, Twitter, and Microsoft if you want to actually send a message. And you're not going to do that. None of us are. Not a single person is going to do that. Not a single person is going to lay down and avoid.
No, they're not. And no one is. But I mean, I guess I would say, to argue the people, that they're making it very uncool. And I think that that's probably good. You know what I mean? They're making it uncool. And now people like even me, like, I didn't have to admit that I saw people using it on Warpath. So now people can say, oh, my God, that has AI in it or whatever. You know, probably smarter for me to just keep my mouth shut. But, you know, it's like they're making it uncool for anyone to mention this. So, like you said, it's still going to happen. People will be more quiet and close to the vest about it. So I don't know. I do think it probably creates, like, the A24 neons and those movies of the world will probably become very stridently anti-AI, because that's going to fit within the cool kid bracket. And I think that's probably pretty good.
I think they're going to be stridently anti-admitting that they use AI. I think it's just going to drive it deeper, which to me is the, at least in my opinion, that's the exact opposite of what we want. Open knowledge, open technology, open information is what we need when it comes to something like this. There is so much confusion because right now, so much of this, how this technology works, is not open and readily available to understand. You have to go digging for it. I've spent the last 4 months trying to get a handle on how both machine learning and generative AI work, and I barely have a grasp on it. So, like, that's the thing. This is work, but I think it's counterproductive to do what happened this weekend. I think most people are on the same page, myself included, about the dangers of using generative AI in this stuff and the problems, but I think this method is actually going to accomplish the exact opposite of what everybody thinks it's going to accomplish, and it's going to make us much worse off. Just like when everybody let the FCC destroy a fair and open internet, or the FTC destroy a fair and open internet and net neutrality and all of that stuff, because they were asleep at the wheel as the people who wanted to destroy net neutrality were taking control of the internet. And they were too busy fighting over things that ultimately didn't matter.
I mean, I think we're just there's, you know, it's the atomic bomb versus a coughing baby. I just don't think any of us are equipped to fight the tech bros on pretty much anything.
No, I
So
agree. I agree. I just wonder.
I don't think there's a single version of a boycott or anything that we could do at any. We are completely, utterly helpless, unfortunately.
And
So
it should be said
again,
that
another
I.
positive vibe podcast, everybody.
It should be said, I think, as well, that also ultimately the use of AI, tying it back to the worst people have it, the tech guys who are also in Hollywood trying to get into Hollywood. I think a lot of people wouldn't feel as bad or be as against it if it was in a more ethically minded people using it. Like if artists, even though technically speaking, Late Night with the Devil, the artists, the directors, they did use it of their own volition. But if it was less in the hands of tech people and more the hands of artists, your Liams, your
Well, that, I
Spielbergs,
mean,
your
that was what
Kaplans.
I was saying to you guys in 2022 when I started doing concepts for what was radio back then, is that I hired a bunch of concept artists and then they would show me their concepts. And then on the corner of the mirror board, they'd be like, oh, and here's a bunch of AI concepts. And I was like, well, what do you, why, what? This makes me uncomfortable. But these are the people that they're using it as an early adopter to the tool, and it's basically stealing their own work. So, I mean, it is more complicated than I think people want to.
And that's kind of my point. If you want to democratize it, you know how you democratize it, Max? You use it. You use it. You learn about it. You either take advantage of it, or at least you have a handle on how it operates, and you don't hide your head in the sand, because hiding your head in the sand is what allows the technocrats and the douchebags to control it. Like you use it. Like for people who don't know me, I try and use as much open source software as I possibly can. I don't use, I don't use a closed source web browser. I still use a fucking Android phone, but and I use Microsoft, but like use the technology for yourself. Use those tools, learn how they work, and then you because there will always be open source. There will always be people who are fighting Google. There will always be the Linuxes of the world. Figure those out, because those guys are also developing generative AI and machine learning stuff. And the more power the more knowledge you have on this, and the less reactionary people are about it, the better equipped you are for the fight that is coming down the road. And that's the thing. I am on the side of creatives. I am on the side of artists. I am on the side of workers. But that's part of the other problem, is some of this argument is kind of inherently anti-worker. If you're so concerned about a movie using AI that you think you should boycott it, you can't really say you're in favor of workers either. You're not pro-labor at that point, and so that's my biggest thing. This is why I said I'm trying not to rant here. I'm trying to hopefully educate. And some of those people that are like, I don't even actually know what this means. How does it work? What can I actually do about it? I'm hoping that I can at least give you something to think about. Vice, we haven't heard from you for this whole thing. What are your thoughts? Because you also work in the tech industry. So what are your thoughts?
I guess I'll just that part first. So the I am not directly involved in AI, but part of the big giant corporation I am, that is a department they're involved in. But I think just with them, well, the company's a relatively good company, I would say. That's why I'm working for them. But also, that you mentioned the regulations. They're pretty, even at this early, well, through its early stages, they've been very adherent and strict on policy guidelines, ethicals, and so forth. Like, for all the experimentation and development that's being done, they are the very clear just lines that they will not cross. And I think that's what you're speaking to, like the regulation of these technology, that's going to be a big portion of it all.
We have that for the state too. We have a very rigid AI use. We are actually encouraged to use it in our work, but we have a very rigid policy on it.
So that's from my and from my other job. But as far as just the current ongoing discourse, I think one, at least maybe if not a way forward, at least a more clear way to think about it is, I think there was some success in the recent strikes and everything. with the SAG and Actors Guild, like, and as far as if you know, I mentioned the big part of it, we have to educate ourselves about it. And even if you're not a tech person, even if you don't have the background knowledge of how, quantum computing works or anything like that, you can at least be clear about, you can either codify or enumerate, at the very least, what it is you're protecting and what your goal is. Like in the strike cases, like a part to their, when they developed their contract negotiations, they're being very clear, very specific mandates about how they want AI to be used or not used, and what more importantly, what they were trying to protect. So it wasn't just AI is bad, that's our stance. It was like, this is the specific things that we traditionally have had and want to continue to have for our survival. And so we cannot abide or rampant or unregulated use of AI for these specific reasons. It's similar competitions going with, like, voice actors, for example, voice manipulation. So, like, you have to understand what it is specifically you're fighting for, what you're trying to protect, what you're trying to preserve. If you just go about this, AI is bad, and that's your stance, that's not a stance at all. You have to understand what goal are you trying to accomplish beyond this Butlerian jihad. You gotta be very specific about what you're trying to protect and how to get there. And you know what? And the thing is, it may come, it may, the possibility does exist that AI might, in fact, in some portion of this, the future, help to preserve those things you want to preserve. But you won't know that. We won't know that at all if we don't aren't specific and knowledgeable about the tool itself, and how it relates to our job and our lives. Like this, yeah, like I said, like this blanket statement of AI is bad, that's not gonna get you anywhere. But yeah, that's my piece. I don't have much to say about that other than,
No, but
yeah.
that's perfect, because that's what started this whole thing for me this weekend. Is all I saw, and this happens all the time on Twitter, I see a lot of people scolding and not a lot of people interested in educating. You know, that article went around about how Denis Villeneuve used machine learning to make the eyes different in Dune 2. And there was a big tweet that went viral that said, that's machine learning, not generative AI. And then did nothing else to try and explain the difference between machine learning and generative AI for people that might be interested and be like, I don't know what that is. And yeah, you're not Google's responsibility. Like, Google your own shit. You're not everybody, but also have a little bit of teaching in your blood if you want to do this. You know, and again, I am an ex-teacher, I'm an ex-college professor. Like, I've been a teacher my whole life. Like, you know, even my professional job, even being a lawyer, a good portion of that is educating a jury on, the law, the facts of the case, stuff like that. So it's in my inherent nature. So I said I would get back to this. Here's the thing. Very simple, very quick difference between machine learning and generative AI. They are based on the exact same tech. It is the use case that is different. With machine learning, what you are doing is feeding it a bunch of data to make it more effective. So a good example would be for, like, somebody like me. I write a lot. I feed those articles to a machine learning software along with my edits that I make and my changes. And it slowly but surely learns my writing style, what I need out of edits, and it can then ultimately edit my work for me. And then I am morally obligated, ethically obligated, professionally obligated to review that, just like I would if I had an assistant edit my work, to make sure that there's nothing wrong with it, because it's still going to be my name on the piece of paper and I'm still responsible for what it says. Generative AI takes that one step farther, where I feed all of this information and, yea, verily, the entire crux of the internet into it. And it actually generates, instead of making old data better, it generates new data. So it would actually write the article for me. And that's where you get all the weird stuff, like hallucinations and stuff like that, because it's only as good as the data that's put into it. And a lot of the data in these is gobbledygook for quite a while. And because the data being put into it is still dependent on humans, that's where you get into the trouble with it also, especially generative AI, also being racist, sexist, biased, and all of that, because, well, we're a racist, sexist, biased society, and that's what's been fed into it. It's garbage. It's good old school tech, right? Garbage in, garbage out. But like Vice said, these are tools. They have specific use cases. If your entire stance is all AI is bad, or like I saw, AI is piracy. First of all, that's just categorically untrue on multiple types of AI. Now, if you want to argue that generative AI is inherently piracy, I mean, that's kind of true. But again, like you said, Vice, that's not a stance. That's a tautology. You take a stand on everything, you take a stand on nothing, because you have to be able to specifically articulate your goals, your power, your ideals, your ethics. The strikes, people, I had a lot of people say, well, isn't that what the whole strikes were about? And I'm like, no, the strikes were in a large part about people wanting to make sure there were rules that prevented these companies from using their stuff without their permission, from scanning them and then being able to use them ad infinitum until the end of history. All right. You can still allow a company, and these studios can still require as part of your contract that you have to allow them to use your voice for ADR, for test screenings, like what Liam said, stuff like that. Like that's all contractual. That can all be contracted.
Yes.
You know, if the guilds don't like it, the guilds can fight that, because this is a fairly blanket statement, but strikes work. Boycotts generally don't. I'm very pro strike. I'm relatively anti boycott, because strikes actually hit the people where it hurts. Boycotts typically hit the workers. But that's a much more elaborate discussion than I can get into on this podcast. But that's the thing. And that's my point. If you're anti-AI, spend less time scolding, more time teaching. And if you can't,
and learning.
And learning. And if you can't teach why you're anti-AI, do you even know why? Do you even know how the technology works? Because I did not see a lot of strong articulation of positions this weekend. And obviously Twitter is a place where nuance goes to die, which is why I stopped talking about it and decided to address it on the podcast and tried to have conversations with people on the Discord instead, where I can formulate these thoughts a little better. And podcast is great, because I have a captive audience. Y'all either have to listen to me or don't, you know, like, you don't. Yeah. So, but that's my point. And I don't want to beat the dead horse on this. I've more or less said my piece, but my point is just take a step back. And especially if you're going to decide to make a horror movie, you know, a small horror movie. And yes, I know it was backed by Shudder and all of that sort of stuff. This isn't like two guys in their basement making a movie, but if you're going to make that the flashpoint of your ire, when you still subscribe to Disney Plus, aim at your target. All right. Like, I understand we can't fully boycott Microsoft. You don't need to subscribe to Disney Plus. You know, the platform that has literally used AI multiple times in multiple of its products. Aim at the right target. Don't the message you want to send was not sent this weekend. The message that was sent this weekend is, independent filmmakers, hide your use of AI. Make sure nobody knows about it. And oh, by the way, it's still going to make your job easier, so you're still going to use it. Like, nothing was accomplished this weekend that did us any good.
I don't know. I'll still say it's okay. I'm okay with making it uncool. And I think that there is value to that, because the way that I make movies is going to become a niche. And yeah. if in order for a niche business to be successful,
it has to be cool.
It has to be cool. So
it has to be cool.
So I feel like there's value in that pressure.
You will soon be the practical effects version of a director.
Exactly. Cause, And I mean, that it goes back to, almost to bring it back to Roadhouse with the robotic camera. It's like, hey, there's something about just like, you know, everyone in your crew becomes sort of your best friend, and you're all there and you're all fucking like working together to get this moment and nail the shot. And when you do, there's this fucking amazing euphoric feeling. And are you going to feel that with the robotic camera? Probably not. It's not the same thing. You know what I mean? So I have a lot of nostalgia for the world that I came up in and the world that I know. And I can see that the world is changing. and I don't like it, but there's nothing I can do about it.
Well, and I think that is, you just summed the, that might actually be the title of the episode. The world is changing and I don't like it. And that is 100. I'm not making fun of you. That is 100%.
No, I know
a legitimate stance to take. I think that is 100%. Like, but where I see a lot of people is they're trying to couch it into some moral stance. And the reality is, no, you just don't like it. And that's fine. Look, I think most generative AI art looks absolutely like dog shit. I think it's actually doing a good enough job making itself uncool by itself that it doesn't necessarily need a ton of help. You know, I mean, people thinking that like they can make Sergio Leone movies look better are really doing a great job of making themselves look uncool. You know, and so so that's the thing. I think uncool technology does not last. And so what it will do is it will ultimately find a way to be cool. But we're not there yet. And it certainly looks like dog shit 90% of the time. So, yeah, I do think, you know, just saying I don't like this is a totally fair position to take. It is going to cost people jobs.
No, I absolutely. It already is. I mean, the voice and the music ones are definitely the first ones that I could see really hurting people.
And actually programmers are taking a real hit because generative AI is generally actually really fucking good at programming. So at writing code. I mean, it makes mistakes. You still have to have somebody look over it, but you know, coders and programmers are gonna take a big hit. Because that's an easy place for, again, an awful corporation to cut money from a budget. You don't need 100. You don't need 100 coders on the next Modern Warfare game. You can use generative AI and one code supervisor, and that's the terror. That is terrifying. I agree, and that sucks.
Yeah, and I mean, we've been talking about this with the volume and how that to me is sort of this interstitial tech. The volume is machine learning, and then you're going to start plugging it with AI, generative AI. And so that's sort of like that's sort of this weird halfway to where things are probably going, which is all, you know, just gobbledygook generated. And we'll have our vinyl records of, hey, this actually has the real actor on the location. And we have our, you know, our small pop percentage of the population that still wants things the old way. But it's no longer the, it kind of already is no longer the dominant form of entertainment. So that's just sort of the way things are going. And I hope I'm able to eke out a living doing what I love to do in the future. And that's it.
Yeah. Vice Max, any final thoughts on this? I think we have beaten this to death. I just hope, I guess for me, I'll just say, well, no, let me hear from you guys. Any final thoughts?
No, I was actually going to suggest we transition to a lighter topic, but we can do that once everyone's set their piece.
Okay. Vice, any final thoughts?
Just you're, you know, the background and like my cybersecurity. So, you know, we did touch upon this stuff. So like we have to safeguard against it, but also understand how it works as well. AI itself is so bad. It's not just like entertainment, medical uses. I've done case studies on how it can be used and misused to like make false diagnosis or to identify false diagnosis. It's the same tool that can, you know, to wound or to heal, you know. So yeah, we have to, it's gonna be part of our life now, some form or other. So we have to take it seriously, but also not be, it's not about being afraid, it's about understanding it all. So, you know, one comes with the other. That just can't just either cower in fear or like cry in terror. You gotta like get a handle on it. So,
I like cowering in fear, and I do like crying in terror. Sometimes it feels good. It's like, don't be toxic positive with me. Sometimes I just want to.
Yeah. Sometimes you gotta cry. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I just, for me, I just hope. I hope people listen to me on this. You don't have to agree with me at all, but at least listen. You know, I've said this a lot this week. The old Ted Lasso, Walt Whitman quote, right? Be curious, not judgmental. There is so much incuriosity around AI. Just be curious about it. Learn about it.
So guys, I just got the gift from my wife. No more talking.
All right, we got to wrap it up. Sorry, Max, whatever you wanted to transition to, we got to wrap it up. When Liam gets that, it's time to go. All right. So, Max, where can people find you?
You can find me on the Discord. I'm on Twitter, most social media sites. Please join the Discord. I will make sure I link it in the when the episode goes live. I will be editing this episode, and I will have it out in the next couple hours. Also, since I've been thinking about the last few days, especially with the Alien Romulus teaser. I'm going to, this is just basically going out to Discord, everyone who's listening. Alien Day, I think it's Friday, and probably going to see if I can't put up Aliens for us to all watch. So if you're interested, have a time you would like to watch it, let me know. But I think that's what I'm going to try and aim for. So just putting it out there now, that's more than a month away.
It's April 27th, right? Is it 27th?
26.
20. I always think it's 427 and not 426, but
anyway. It'll be 426.
Liam, where can people find you?
Free Discord, X and Instagram, Liam Odin. And I'm going to be cheery and happy from now on. Promise.
And I will just say, I won't go into any details, but Liam sent me an email this week, and you should be very cheery and happy, man. You absolutely should be very cheery and happy.
Oh, thank you, Mike.
More on that to come, but not today. Vice, where can people find you?
At my fitness, Instagram, looking hot. Happy birthday, wife. I got pictures of me and my wife doing hot things. Check me out there. Letterboxd. You see my review of the Roadhouse. And Till One of Us Dies on Twitter. At my fitness, talking all the shit. Next week. You know what's next week.
Oh, Vice, are we starting like fake wars on Twitter?
No, it's peace. Go, this is peace now. It's all good.
So
you gotta fight true enemy.
Oh, is that actually next week? All right.
Yeah.
You can not currently find me on Twitter at Hibachi Justice, but you can find me at Hibachi Justice everywhere else. I have peaced out on Twitter for the time being. I might actually just let it die, but we'll see. But you can find the show at A4E Podcast. That's still running strong. And for the most part, if you see a tweet from that, you know it's coming from me. But again, the A4E Discord is the best place to find me, especially if you want to have an actual conversation with me. That is by far and away the best place to find me. So, all right, with that, boys, we'll be back next week. Godzilla teaming up with Monkey. Lizard Monkey. All right.